So I think about it like this. We have this huge storage of magnesium in our bones. That's like having it out in the hall closet. It's great that it's there, but when you really need it at the moment, it's not close enough.
This is On Nutrition, a podcast from Mayo Clinic, where we dig into the latest nutrition trends and research to help you understand what's health and what's hype. I'm Tara Schmidt, a registered dietitian with Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. This episode, we're talking about magnesium. You know, the mineral they say can help you sleep? Turns out that's not necessarily true, but magnesium is a critical element in our body's functioning. Without it, we'd quite literally fall apart. Here to unpack the magic of magnesium is Joy Heimgartner, a registered dietitian nutritionist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Joy is also an assistant professor of nutrition at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science and the primary dietitian for the hospital-based outpatient blood and bone marrow transplant program. Hi, Joy. Thanks for being with me today.
Nice to be with you, Tara.
Joy, were you in middle school or high school where they did that thing where a teacher like lights a magnesium ribbon on fire? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about right now?
Oh, that sounds familiar, but you realize that I don't remember much of high school chemistry. I mean, magnesium does really light a fire in our bodies too. So,
ooh, I'm excited to hear more about that. So to start off, can you give us a general introduction to magnesium? Why is it so important?
Magnesium is really ubiquitous in our world. It's everywhere. It's one of the most abundant minerals in our food supply, and magnesium has many roles in our body, and it's one of the main minerals that we need in our body, and so it sort of makes sense that it would be in lots of different foods. We have lots of storage of it in our body, in our bones, because our body needs it for literally hundreds and hundreds of different reactions that happen every single day just to keep our bodies moving.
Let's talk about some of the health benefits. You don't have to list all of them because it sounds like there's a lot. But tell us some of the key positive roles that it plays in the body.
Magnesium plays a role with calcium, vitamin D for bone health. Diets higher in magnesium are shown to give people higher bone mineral densities. That's a big part of magnesium's role. Magnesium also is the cofactor in hundreds of metabolic actions, including the stabilization of DNA, which is why we know it's probably helpful for some cancer metastases prevention, things like that. Oh. It's also important in managing blood glucose. So a lot of the research that's been done with magnesium has been done in patients with type 2 diabetes and how magnesium plays a role in prevention of type 2 diabetes and how it can become worse when we are magnesium deficient. I think in the popular media, lately, we've heard a lot about sleep and magnesium. Yes. It has been studied in several small studies. They haven't been really well done, and they haven't consistently showed a lot of good effects. There hasn't been really great evidence that supplementing magnesium makes a big difference in sleep.
Oh, wow. And when we talk about magnesium, especially in supplement form, are we talking about different types of magnesium, or are we talking about just one thing?
Not when we're talking about magnesium supplements. There are over 10, I think, different formulations of magnesium you could go buy in the store. They're usually bound with something in a different way. Some of them claim to be more absorbable than others. That might be true.
You sound skeptical.
Some are more absorbable than others, but they generally also require that you take a whole lot more pills. So to get the same amount of elemental magnesium, you might have to take 8 pills instead of 2 pills. So people often ask why we use a specific formulation in the hospital, which tends to be one that's touted as not, you know, being very absorbable. Well, it's because we don't really want to make our patients take 16 pills a day. We'd like to reduce their pill burden. So, yeah, lots of different kinds of magnesium.
And since we're talking about magnesium supplements, what are your thoughts on those?
I think it's pretty common for us all to believe that, well, magnesium is in our diet, but I probably don't get enough, and so I should take a supplement. So I know that I'm a dietitian, and people must get really tired of us as dietitians saying things like...
Food first.
Food first. Exactly, food first.
Say it all the time. But
for magnesium, it is actually really important that we try to get magnesium from food first. So magnesium, as I said, is in a lot of different foods in small amounts, and... interestingly enough, our body doesn't really absorb very much of it at one time. And so when we eat large amounts of it, our body's really good at just dumping and getting rid of what we don't need at that time. By just default, when we take a supplement, we're usually taking a large amount of something, probably not getting a lot of use out of it.
That's how we tend to educate people on protein.
Yeah.
And we know that there's some conflicting evidence, and it's a 30 grams and 35, yada, yada. But that's exactly the same analogy that I use, is let's try to divide it evenly-ish amongst your meals. You kind of say the same thing with magnesium.
Exactly. I say the same thing about magnesium because we also know that the absorption peaks a little bit hour or two after you eat magnesium, and then it stays steady over time, and then by 10 hours, it's gone. Well, that's also going to change and be even longer and more stretched out when we're eating it in food, because food doesn't all just go in your stomach, dump out in your intestines at the same time the way a supplement might, right? Which is one of the benefits of eating protein in meals versus supplements, one of the benefits of eating magnesium in foods instead of supplements. So this is one area where I really do believe that if we can get people to understand where magnesium is in your diet and how to get more, they're going to see a lot bigger bang from their buck than they would if they went to the store and bought a magnesium supplement. Plus, no nasty side effects.
So. I think I'm aware of a few.
So the number one side effect of magnesium supplementation is diarrhea and stomach upset. In fact, when you look up magnesium citrate, it's actually in the laxative category of drugs. I mean, milk of magnesia, that's what it is. It's magnesium to help move things along.
If you're someone who takes the average daily multivitamin, multimineral, does that have enough magnesium in it? I think the FDA recommends 420 milligrams of magnesium per day for adults.
Yes, there is some magnesium usually in a multivitamin. It's typically less than 25% of your daily requirement, which is totally fine because, as we've talked about, your body's not going to absorb it well. So there is some in a daily multivitamin.
Do you want to list top three, top five sources of magnesium for us?
Yeah. So I think it's really interesting because we're like, what are the big magnesium sources? Because we're always looking for a silver bullet pill or some kind of superfood that can give us tons of magnesium.
That's in quotes, by the way.
Yeah, that was air quotes, superfood. And so, like, if you think about that absorption of magnesium, we actually probably don't want some big hit of magnesium. We want smaller hits of magnesium throughout the day. So the way that I like to think about it, rather than what are the big sources, are what are the things that I'm going to be able to eat multiple times throughout the day? One of the biggest sources by ounce is hemp hearts or pepitas, pumpkin seeds. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I'm not going to eat those things 10 times a day. You know?
Sounds expensive.
It sounds expensive. Makes the tummy hurt just a little bit. You know, there's other things that are really good sources of magnesium, like any whole grains of any type. So whole grain breads, brown rice, cereals, those are things that, you know, we're supposed to be getting multiple sources of every day, multiple servings of every day. So that's one of the easiest swap outs in your diet to make to increase your magnesium, because refined grain products like white breads or white pastas really have had all of the magnesium stripped out of them. And that's not something we typically add back, but whole grain products like whole grain pasta, whoa, lots of magnesium in whole grain pasta. So that's a great, easy way to swap those things out.
And that's an easier shift for people too, as opposed to, okay, I was told to eat hemp hearts. What is a hemp heart? Do I like it? Where do I get it?
How do I use it? Yeah.
Some kind of grain is likely part of the majority of your meals anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, where are you going to get it most often? Mm-hmm. So in our house, we made the swap a few years ago to eating whole wheat pasta, and it's got more tooth to it. It's a little bit harder and gritty. And, you know, I can tolerate that stuff. So I'm like, it's good for me, my husband. So we started out with thinner pastas first, swapping out with angel hair whole wheat pasta and spaghetti whole wheat pasta, because the thinner it is, the less, you know, different it is from, less cardboardy it is from your regular pastas. And now we do the penne and the rigatoni, and it's just kind of our standard pasta. And that's a way we eat a lot of our whole grains in our house. So other great sources include beans, brown rice, and legumes. So black beans, especially black-eyed peas, those are great sources of magnesium. Nuts are a great source of magnesium as well, particularly almonds, peanuts also, cashews also very filling. One of the frustrating things about trying to manage magnesium in your diet is magnesium is not something that's required to be listed on a label.
So you can't count it like you can
sodium, can calcium or something like that. There are some foods that will list the magnesium. Generally, whole grain cereals will list the magnesium on them. You can find online good sources of how much magnesium is in different types of foods, but it's a little bit more frustrating to do it that way.
Any other sources of magnesium?
Dairy products are a decent source of magnesium. Both cow's milk, cow's yogurt, those things are good sources of magnesium, and also soy milk. So if you can't do dairy, soy products are also an excellent source of magnesium, more so than almond milk. You know, almond milk doesn't have many almonds in it, doesn't have very much magnesium. Soy milk has twice as much magnesium as almond milk does. And then leafy greens are also an excellent source of magnesium. Always keep those leafy greens in. Spinach is higher than kale.
Oh, interesting.
Know, sometimes surprising for people. I'm not a huge fan of the fresh spinach, mostly because I feel like I buy a wheelbarrow of it and it makes a serving. But I've really started to use frozen spinach in smoothies because frozen spinach is really economical and doesn't taste great when it's cooked, I don't think. But frozen spinach in a smoothie, bueno.
And so many of the foods, Joy, that you have been mentioning are beneficial for a thousand other reasons, right? So we talk about whole grains and beans. Both of those, we're always lecturing people about Americans not getting enough fiber. We're talking about soy milk and beans, again, as more towards a plant-forward diet. We're never going to stop talking about leafy greens.
Yeah. And then when you get into the animal foods, one of the biggest sources of magnesium in our world is the oceans. Ocean-going fish like halibut and salmon are also much higher in magnesium than land-based animals. So another reason to eat, especially wild salmon particularly, has more magnesium. You're not going to eat halibut every single day, multiple meals a day. But if I'm making a choice between other animal meat proteins, you know, fish gives you those benefits of magnesium plus all the other things that we know about.
It sounds like we can do a fairly plant-forward or Mediterranean-ish style diet, right?
Absolutely.
So we're talking about nuts, whole grains, and fish.
Beans.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Magnesium is one of the main minerals we need to function and keep our bodies moving. That's why it's stored all over our body, in our bones, our tissues, and our muscles. It's important for our bone health and helps manage blood glucose, prevent type 2 diabetes, and possibly even cancer. When it comes to getting enough magnesium, it's always best to get it from food first. Magnesium is actually in a large variety of food sources, in small amounts. So if you're tracking your magnesium intake, it's good to consider. What are foods you're able to eat multiple times throughout the day? Some great sources of magnesium include whole grains, brown rice, beans, legumes, nuts, and dairy products like yogurt and milk. If you're lactose intolerant, soy milk is a good alternative. Leafy greens are also a great source of magnesium. And when it comes to proteins, prioritize fish over land-based animals. So why food first and not just go straight to the supplements? Well, a couple of reasons. Our body can only absorb so much magnesium at once, and when we take in large amounts, our kidneys help us get rid of the excess we can't handle. With supplements, you're usually taking in a lot of magnesium at once, but not really getting any more benefit. Instead, it's better to get smaller hits of magnesium throughout the day and try to divide it evenly among your meals. That way, it stays in your body longer. Now, what happens when you have too little or too much magnesium? Let's find out. How common is magnesium deficiency? Do we see it very often?
Symptomatic magnesium deficiency is really uncommon. You're not really going to see it. So the symptoms, quote unquote, of magnesium deficiency are things like loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, fatigue, weakness. I mean, some of those things people would just say it's a Monday morning for me, right? And there's a lot of things that could cause those symptoms. So we don't routinely check for magnesium levels. And in the average person, we wouldn't even necessarily suspect magnesium deficiency. I mean, the people that are likely to have magnesium deficiencies are not your average person. Even people who don't have particularly quote unquote healthy diets, we're not going to detect a magnesium deficiency by checking their blood. And also, talking about deficiency in magnesium is a little bit different than talking about magnesium inadequacy. So because we don't routinely check for magnesium, we don't really know how many people don't have enough magnesium. And also, even if we did routinely check for magnesium, it doesn't really tell us anything.
And why is that?
So in our bodies, 60% of the magnesium is in our bones. Most of the rest of it is in our soft tissues, like our muscles and our organs and things like that. Less than 1% of it is in our blood, where we check magnesium. When we do a serum magnesium in the hospital, we're checking this serum level of magnesium. So we're looking at less than 1% of what is in your body. So in the hospital, if you've had a loved one who's been hospitalized or they've had a chronic illness, it's possible that they've had their magnesium checked on a regular basis. And we do that not really to check magnesium, but magnesium levels on that day-to-day basis in the serum that we're checking tend to tell us a lot about other things that might be going on. So when magnesium is low in a patient who's critically ill or chronically ill, it tends to drive down serum potassium as well. And serum potassium needs to be regulated really tightly. And if we try to just fix the potassium when the magnesium is really low, we're not going to get anywhere. We need to fix both of them to help this patient get back within a normal level. Getting a low level on a serum magnesium check really only tells you what's happening in this very tiny snapshot of time. You know, the key when somebody has a really low magnesium is to figure out the why. We don't just slap supplements on it. It either means there's a problem with their absorption or there's a problem with how their body's getting rid of it. So don't let anybody convince you you need to go get your magnesium tested. In fact, you would be better served by going to a dietitian who could actually give some, you know, food recalls of what your diet looks like. And your dietitian could put that into a program and figure out what your dietary magnesium intake is. That would give you a better sense of whether you might be magnesium inadequate than it would be to test in your blood.
So you mentioned that a serum magnesium check is really only checking on 1% of the magnesium that's in our body. But what about the other magnesium we have in our bones, in our soft tissues, muscles, organs, et cetera?
So I think about it like this. We have this huge storage of magnesium in our bones. That's like having a storage shed across town with your toilet paper in it, right? But you need to keep some closer to you. So you've got these body stores of magnesium too in your muscles and your other tissues. That's like having it like out in the hall closet. You know, you got your toilet paper out there. Again, it's great that it's there, but when you really need it at the moment, it's not close enough. So what we're actually checking usually is what's right there in the bathroom with you. You know, how much serum magnesium you have is like, what's the toilet paper on the roll sitting next to you? But you know, you can say, I'm out of toilet paper, and you'd be like, you have a whole storage shed out there full of toilet paper, right? Your bones are full of magnesium, but that's not going to help you in the moment. So when patients are critically ill or they're chronically ill, we're sort of evaluating their magnesium to tell how good is their body right now at getting the magnesium where it needs to go. How good they are absorbing it right now, or what other things are happening that are making their body get rid of it faster than they normally would. So it's not really telling us anything about magnesium status or deficiency. Does that make sense?
Totally. That's the first toilet paper analogy I think I've ever heard. But the fact that both of us are dietitians, and if you know anything about dietitians, we're totally comfortable with
what's happening
in your digestive tract. So I'm all good with it. What about the kidneys? How do the kidneys impact magnesium absorption?
Yeah, so when we talk about that in medicine, we talk about homeostasis, which means keeping things in a nice, even range. So magnesium homeostasis in the body is managed by absorption in your digestive tract, which is mainly in the lower parts of your small intestine. That's what absorbs it. And then your kidneys monitor what levels are going on in your blood. They do the filtering and they get rid of stuff you don't need. So unless people have conditions that cause them to either not be able to absorb magnesium in their digestive tract, like Crohn's disease, some gastric surgeries, chronic diarrhea, graft versus host disease can make it difficult to absorb nutrients, maybe not absorbing as much magnesium. So it's more patients who have malabsorptive problems from alcoholism, also from GI diseases, celiac disease, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, things like that. And then on the other end of things, if there are reasons why patients have more excretion, their kidneys are getting rid of more magnesium than they normally would. And that's in medicine, especially in the area that I work in transplant, that's where we see a lot of problems with driving magnesium deficiency, because medications that we use commonly in transplant to prevent rejection, to prevent graft versus host disease, those tend to cause the body to absolutely waste magnesium. And if you look up reasons why patients might need to have supplements of magnesium, it's almost entirely always related to being on medications.
What are other medications that have the same effect?
Other medications that do that are some types of diuretics, like loop diuretics, and some proton pump inhibitor medications if patients have been on them for greater than a year. So taking a, you know, proton pump inhibitor for a short period of time is not something that's going to make us concerned about magnesium deficiency, but being on it for a prolonged time might. So those are reasons why you might need more magnesium than you can possibly get in your diet. The other thing that's important to know about the kidneys is, you know, we know that part of its job is to get rid of excess magnesium. So if your kidneys are healthy, it is not really possible to get too much magnesium from your food. You're not going to have negative side effects from high magnesium foods, and your kidneys are going to get rid of what
you're not going to store it and become toxic like we can with other like fat-soluble vitamins, for example.
No. Now, if you have healthy kidneys and you take a lot of magnesium supplements, you might still have a lot of side effects, and there is an upper limit that you shouldn't go beyond if you're taking magnesium supplements. You're probably going to hit your own personal gastrointestinal limit because the side effects of magnesium supplementation tends to be nausea, diarrhea, looser stools, things like that.
So impacting the intestines.
Exactly.
So we know that healthy kidneys help us filter through too much magnesium. But what if someone's kidneys aren't healthy or aren't operating like they should? Can you get too much?
In patients who don't have healthy kidneys, so patients with acute kidney injury or maybe chronic kidney injury, it is possible for them to definitely get too much magnesium, especially if they're taking any kind of supplements, which they shouldn't be really. It's very rare that we have to ask patients to eat less magnesium, even patients who have kidney failure. But it might be something that your dietitian or your dialysis physician talks to you about if you're having kidney issues. There's also some interplay with magnesium and calcium throughout the body. And so some patients who are prone to certain types of kidney stones actually do better when they're eating a diet high in magnesium because the magnesium helps to balance that calcium out.
Yeah.
That's a big common theme that calcium and magnesium kind of need to be in balance. So it's important to talk to your doctor, your pharmacist, if you're taking calcium for your bones, about your magnesium as well, because that's going to help your calcium work better. It's going to help your magnesium work better. It helps vitamin D work better. It helps prevent kidney stones. So all these different things. Again, if you have healthy working kidneys, you cannot get too much magnesium from food and you're not going to get negative GI side effects. I mean, if you suddenly go to eating a bunch of whole grains and nuts and seeds, and that's not something you've done in the past, all that extra fiber.
Yeah, that's not the magnesium.
Yeah, but that's not the magnesium causing the problem. So it's really only the supplements that we worry about those side effects.
Magnesium deficiency is uncommon. That said, if you're looking to get checked for it, there are some things you should know about the process. First off, the tests don't tell us a whole lot. We check magnesium levels by taking a serum magnesium test, but our blood only carries 1% of all the magnesium in our body. So if so little of the magnesium in our body is in our blood, where's the rest of it? Well, it's in our bones, our soft tissues, muscles, and organs. The trick is getting your body to transfer it from your bones to wherever it needs to go. And that is what the test is better at evaluating. It can look at how well you're absorbing magnesium. For people with malabsorptive problems, the issue could stem from alcoholism, GI diseases like celiac disease, among other possibilities. On the other hand, the test can also check if your body is getting rid of more magnesium than it should. This could be due to certain medications. So if you have either of these problems, you might need more magnesium than you're able to get from your diet. That's where supplements can come in. But for most of us, our magnesium levels will be healthy, especially because our kidneys do a good job of getting rid of any excess. So, in most cases, if you're worried about your magnesium levels, you'd likely be better off seeing a dietitian. Together, you can assess your dietary magnesium intake. Joy, you're actually part of a research study at Mayo that's looking at the connection between diets high in magnesium and how they impact cancer. What are you finding?
People who have diets that are higher in magnesium have a lower incidence of cancer risk. And we've known this for a long time about solid tumors, but there's been more evidence that this is true also in hematological malignancies, so lymphoma, leukemia. So researchers here at Mayo looked back at the specific set of lymphoma patients and looked at their magnesium levels before transplant and after transplant, and found their pre-transplant magnesium had a significant impact on their disease-free survival and their overall survival after transplant. The nice thing about working with lymphoma patients and talking about magnesium is I'm also talking about just the foods I would talk to them about preventing cancer recurrence, cancer survivorship. There's no different information there.
So we're talking about magnesium's cancer-fighting abilities. It can also help decrease the risk of osteoporosis, right?
Magnesium is integral in the metabolism of bones. People who have diets higher in magnesium from food had higher bone mineral densities. The same was not shown in patients who take magnesium supplements. So it's important to understand that all throughout our body, there's this interplay between magnesium and calcium. They closely work together. Bone mineral density is an indicator of potential risk for osteoporosis. So when somebody has osteoporosis or is at risk for osteoporosis, we're basing it on what is their bone mineral density to look like. This is not a snapshot deal. But if you're always pulling magnesium from your storage shed of your bones and not replacing it, you're going to get weak bones.
Back to the toilet paper. And you work in blood and bone marrow transplant. How does a magnesium-rich diet benefit your patients specifically? Because you sound like one of the few departments, I'll admit, in clinic and outpatient setting that you're actually watching, encouraging, tracking magnesium.
So in blood and marrow transplant, patients are often on medications that make their body waste magnesium. And we're always trying to manage their potassium, other electrolytes in their body. And their magnesium is so low because they're wasting it with this medication that we have to give them IV magnesium. And so if their magnesium is low, we need to replace that before we can get their potassium to also go up higher. And we start out at a high level, and over the course of several months, we reduce it. So there's a point at which we probably don't need to keep giving them magnesium. Now, one of the interesting things about IV magnesium, just like taking it from supplements or food, it's absorbed best when we do it over a long period of time. And there's some evidence that if we lengthen it out even longer, patients wouldn't have to get as much. But there's, you know, this downplay of you really want to come in and sit here for 12 hours versus 6 hours to get your 3 grams of IV magnesium. Interestingly, now home care companies do home IV magnesium infusions. So patients who already have a central line, they get a magnesium infusion and they can do it at home, and they can do it over a little bit longer period of time.
Of the patient population that you work with, are there any other disease states that put people at risk of magnesium deficiency?
Probably one of the most studied areas of magnesium is in patients with type 2 diabetes. So diets with higher amounts of magnesium are associated with a lower risk of diabetes. And there's several reasons why that might be true. Magnesium plays an important role in glucose metabolism. So having low magnesium might make insulin resistance worse. And then there's the other side effect that when you have diabetes, it can lead to increased loss of magnesium in your urine. So you're sort of amplifying this decreased magnesium.
Snowballing.
Yeah, you're snowballing this magnesium depletion. So again, really good idea for people at risk for type 2 diabetes or who have type 2 diabetes to be managing the magnesium levels in their diet. And again, it's the same things, right? We encourage them to switch to whole grains. We encourage them to eat more leafy greens, more beans, you know, in place of other higher saturated fat proteins. In the big studies that have been done, the most profound impacts were found on subjects that had a higher take of magnesium from foods. The studies that have been done haven't shown consistent results in saying that magnesium supplementation is helpful with people with diabetes. And in fact, the American Diabetes Association says there's not enough evidence to support the use of any routine magnesium supplements for glycemic control in patients with type 2 diabetes. So if you're at risk for type 2 diabetes or have it, again, the focus should be on making some swaps in your diet.
This is what the Mayo Clinic diet says, right? We aim for at least 4 servings of vegetables a day, at least 3 servings of fruit per day. If you're on our Mediterranean meal plan, you're going to get fish multiple times a week.
It would just be a lot easier if we could test something, say it's low, take a pill, we're done, and it have no impacts. But that's not true. And if you are taking magnesium supplements, it is really important. I always say it's really important to talk to your doctor, but that's not the most important part. It's really important that any supplement that you're taking, whether it's a vitamin, a mineral, magnesium, calcium, is on your medication list for your doctor.
Yes.
Because talking about it one time only tells you about that one time. But if you get started on another medication, magnesium can really impact the absorption of lots of different medications. Calcium's the same way. You may need to really alter when you take it compared to your other medications. So always really important to have any vitamins, minerals on your medication list so your team can see that always.
I feel like I learned a ton today, and I'm off to go eat some spinach and brown rice.
Yeah.
Just kidding. People hate when dietitians tell them to eat spinach and brown rice.
If you are wondering, dark chocolate, at least 60% cocoa dark chocolate, is also a pretty decent source of magnesium.
Well, there we go.
So that's a nice sweet ending to, you know, I wouldn't suggest all your magnesium come from dark chocolate, but certainly that's a great option.
We'll take it. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today, Joy. I love working with you when I get to work with you, but also just absorbing all that you know.
This has been really fun. Thanks for having me.
Magnesium can help lower the incidence of cancer, type 2 diabetes, and also help prevent osteoporosis. People who have diets higher in magnesium have higher bone mineral densities, but people who use magnesium supplements don't get the same results. If you already have type 2 diabetes, it's especially important to keep up your magnesium intake. Low magnesium can make insulin resistance worse. And one hugely important note, if you are taking magnesium supplements, it's important to tell your doctor and put it on your medications list. Magnesium can really impact the absorption of many different medications. Generally, you want to get magnesium from food first. And the good news is, you can always start off with dark chocolate. That's all for this episode. But if you've got a question or topic suggestion, you can leave us a voicemail at 507-538-6272. We might even feature your voice on the show. For more On Nutrition episodes and resources, check us out online at mayoclinic.org/onnutrition. And if you found this show helpful, please subscribe and make sure to rate and review us on your podcast app. It really helps others find the show. Thanks for listening. And until next time, eat well and be well.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as medical or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any medical questions. The appearance of any guest does not imply an endorsement of them, their employer, or any entity they represent. The views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Mayo Clinic. Reference to any product, service, or entity does not constitute an endorsement of or recommendation by Mayo Clinic.